Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Buddha Center podcast with me, Chandradasa. And I'm delighted to say welcome to our festive, slightly unexpected holiday edition of the podcast from here live in Manchester in a very special place, quite late on a Friday evening, coming towards the end of the day. You could probably hear some chill vibes distantly in the background. The voices of a few remaining customers in this secret place, this new place. And we've come here to have a conversation with two friends from our Dharma community here in Sri Ratna. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know that it's all about people's lives as Buddhists in the modern world, the kind of intersection, the meeting place between Buddhism, the Dharma, as we call it, and culture. And there's no better place I can think of than Hinterland Bar, here in one of the grooviest areas of Manchester in England, in the United Kingdom, on a Friday night just before Christmas. We've just been out walking the streets, listening to crazy, beautiful drumming, watching the crowds throng as they get ready for the holidays and come back or go out from their Christmas parties. And we're now in the back room at Hinterland Bar in Manchester with two founders, Sangadara.
Hi, everyone.
And Stephen.
Hello.
And I'm just so happy to be here because I've wanted to visit this bar, this project, ever since it was conceived. Some of you will know Dharma Chakra's team also includes the wonderful Sangadara, media mogul extraordinaire in Sri Ratna. But now the proud co-owner of a sober bar. Some of you might know what a sober bar is, some of you might not. You'll probably be listening to this episode in January, which is in the UK sometimes known as Dry January. Dry January. And what's the other one? Veganuary.
Yeah.
So this is a sober vegan bar. And if you don't think that sounds sexy, well, wait till you hear. I can tell you, actually, before we get into the conversation, it is a really beautiful space. We'll put up some pictures with it. And I saw photographs of this empty space before it was developed. I cannot believe what you guys have done to it. It is just beautiful. Just beautiful. And it looks like it's been here forever. It's lived in, it's so cozy, and it's really classy. It's not like a little hobby project. It feels like a really classy professional bar that only serves the most extraordinary non-alcoholic drinks. So let's get into it. What brings us on the podcast to Hinterland? First of all, why Hinterland? When I heard the name, I thought, ooh, liminal space, poetic space. Why Hinterland?
Well, the name came as an accident almost. It started with the space itself. We are right in the basement of a Buddhist center, a large building right in the city center. The Buddhist center here has been for 30 years, and we've seen this area changing a lot. The premise where we're in, it was one of the first vegetarian and vegan cafes in the north, and it was a vegetarian cafe for 25 years or so. And it closed during lockdowns. And when it closed, I thought, oh, what would be good to take place here? What would I do? I thought, what do I think it would work? And thought, well, it would be good to have a night offering rather than just food. And it would be good to offer drinks. You know, me being from Mexico and used to actually going out quite late. And there's not much of that. I mean, there's bars, but there's nowhere where you can go and get hot chocolates or tea or coffee. Nowhere cool where you can actually have a conversation that wasn't on very loud music in the background. So somewhere where you can go and have a chat over a nice drink, quite cozy. So the place happened first, and then the idea of, okay, if we want to be open late and maybe a bar, and obviously not going to sell alcohol because we're a Buddhist building and it would be a Buddhist team, so we'll make it a sober space. So those things we almost didn't have to invent or come up. It was just obvious aspects of what this place is going to be, and also the fact that it was half in the basement, so it was a bit hidden away. So I thought that the name needed to be a bit secret, a bit hidden, a bit underground. I love the idea also kind of a bohemian space. I think I'm come from a very bohemian upbringing and a very kind of, yeah, new agey bohemian counterculture kind of thing. So, and it was playing a board game basically where I came across a word, and the card that had the definition of hinterland said something like the realm or space beyond what is known or familiar. So immediately kind of had a poetic way, you know, the known or familiar. And I think realm was one of the words on the card, and I was like, oh. And in here we just summarize it as the realm beyond what's known. So I thought, oh, fantastic. For us as Buddhists, how do we interact with the world in a different way, beyond Buddhist centers, beyond Buddhist classes or meditation classes? how to engage with culture. That's a bit of an unknown. So that's a kind of a hinterland for us. How do we open our doors in different ways? And it's the hinterland for the world that's mostly, you know, alcohol bars. So yeah, as I had the word, I didn't think it would be the name for the bar. I don't know, the more it was just there as a draft.
You played with it.
The more kind of the idea and the name kind of grew with each other or something into each other.
And it is part of a real radical tradition in this building, isn't it? It's been here, as you say, for about 30 years. And for those who don't know, which I guess is probably most people, Manchester Buddhist Centre was a pioneering project back when it opened. The wonderful Moksha Priya took on this old derelict building in, at that point, a not particularly cool area of Manchester, and just did something extraordinary with it, turned it into a very modern piece of architecture, very aesthetic, very beautiful, very considered space. And you're in that tradition as a project where you've done something, again, that pushes the boundaries of what you do in urban spaces. Of course, now it's a very up-and-coming area. It's cool. There's an extraordinary audience there. Stephen, I'm aware that you're one of the passionate voices behind this being a sober bar.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Buddhists are probably not going to open a liquor bar or an alcohol bar, but it's not just the absence of something, is it? There's something much more positive about being a sober bar, particularly in an area that loads of young people frequent and is part of the kind of beating heart of Manchester today.
Yeah, I think for me it was really important because when I was getting sober about 5 or 6 years ago, there just wasn't spaces like this. And it was such a fear for me in getting sober that I would lose a social space to have. So when Sangadara came to me with the idea of a sober bar, like straight away it resonated with me. Of when we were opening up, I said that I wanted to go back to myself 6 years ago, give myself a hug and just say the space that you're looking for will exist and you'll be the one that's helped create it. And I just, you know, I teared up thinking about it of just, yeah, we can really transform the way that people think about going out. And that transformation is already happening. Obviously, we did our research before opening up, and the demand for sober spaces is really high and the supply is very, very low. So again, that transformational revolutionary aspect of this basement space of, you know, Earth Cafe did it 25 years ago, and we get to carry on that heritage doing it now with Manchester's first permanent sober bar is, you know, it's really exciting. And I genuinely, you know, you look at Manchester now and it's got vegan places, or at least it did, it had vegan places all over. I think in 10 years time, it's going to be the same with alcohol-free bars. People are going to think about socializing very, very differently in 5 to 10 years. And we're going to have been part of that. We're going to help dictate that narrative. And that's just really exciting, and really exciting to see the people who do come down here. We get such a range of people who are quite happy with their alcohol intake. They still drink, but every now and then they'll just want a night away from it. So they'll come, they'll still have really good drinks. It's not going to change completely their alcohol intake, but it's showing them that a different way is possible. To the people who are looking at getting sober, to the people who have been sober for years and are now just really excited that they get to share that sobriety with friends. So we get to really see the difference in people's perspectives of going out. They can still have a drink. And I think there's something about that adult drink, you know, it's not a soft drink. It's a drink that you take your time with, you know. It tastes like a cocktail or a beer, so you drink it slowly. It just opens up conversation. It allows people to just have a conversation with each other, get really deep, and it's not forgotten the next day because you've got too drunk, or it's not purely stimulated by the feeling that you get because you're drunk. You're having an honest conversation, real connection, and it's not chemically based. It's based off you and the other person, which is really special.
Yeah, and I mean, I can attest, like a lot of people these days, I've tried vegan beers and non-alcoholic beers, and I think in the past that was always a little bit of an ordeal, both being vegan and being sober. But I've been eating your food this afternoon, which is extraordinary vegan food. Maybe you'll talk a bit about the partnership you formed to get that food. And you gave me one of your seasonal cocktails. It's called, how do you say it? Santa's Sleigh.
Yeah,
is that
how you say it? Santa's Sleigh.
Sleigh. Okay. It's got many A's. Santa's Sleigh. And it really is like drinking a very sophisticated, complex spirit. So you've got loads of non-alcoholic wine and beer and other kinds of drinks. But these spirits, these kind of infused spirits, are really, really amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, and pretty shocking in a way, because as you say, you're drinking it feels complex enough that you want to slow down and savour it and think, well, what is this?
Yeah.
In the way that you do with the best cocktails, right?
Mm. Yeah. And I think with alcohol not being the focus of it, I remember when I used to drink cocktails, it was like, okay, I was looking at taste. I was also looking at alcohol divided by cots.
Nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
We're not focusing on that. So we really get to experiment with flavor and we really get to experiment with, okay, so it doesn't just have to be how much of this spirit can we get in to satisfy our customers. It's what combination of this spirit with these different flavors do we get to mix together to make the nicest drink that, you know, has that hint of something a bit more complex, a bit stronger. So it makes people feel like it's an adult drink, but it's also just really tasty. So the spirit that's in the drink that you had isn't trying to imitate any other spirit, which I think is really exciting that the alcohol-free industry has got into a space where it's not just, oh, we need to come up with replicants of the alcohol spirits because that's what people are looking for. There's enough interest now that they can just make something that's really tasty,
yeah,
which I think is, you know, a really exciting momentum to go towards.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this and thinking, I'm not sure I believe that, honestly, come to Hinterland if you can, or just try and get hold of one of these really complex spirits. So maybe we'll put some show notes in about the best of them. And it is a whole art, isn't it? There's a whole art form and an industry has sprung up around, well, how do you take botanicals, which maybe people know from things like the gin industry. How do you take botanicals and do something with them that creates, as you say, something new? And that seems to be a part of the whole vibe here. You're not just opening a bar and removing something. And I'm struck that this is not an abstraction for either of you. You're both like totally passionate about it for different reasons. And you're bringing all of yourself and you've given stuff up to do it. So I'd like to hear a bit more about that passion. Like, why this? Because you could have done anything in this piece. So why did, Sangra, why did you get passionate about a sober bar? And does it feel like you went down the right road?
I guess the passion for me comes from, again, I think that the name really comes alive as well in response to that when articulating the, I don't know, the place of the passion, which is really trying to explore how Buddhism will inform contemporary, modern, evolving culture, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I came to Tirana as a teenager. It was called Western Buddhist Order. Soon I started practicing within this tradition and I realized that we used to try and bring in principles and practices of Buddhism into expression on our modern lives. So, and the fact that it's kind of a new tradition. So it's not just an import of, you know, it's not copy and paste from another tradition, you know, the cultural expressions or practices, you know, these inspirations and core principles and views, but its cultural expression is yet to be seen. So to be involved in a new tradition as a creative, that's just really intrigued me. You just kind of want to participate in the creation of a new culture. Our tagline at Hinterland is brewing a new society. So this idea of how do we inform culture for better? You know?
New ways for people to live. And so I'm looking around the room that we're in. This is just one of these beautiful rooms that you have. And you're talking about cultural expression and trying to find new forms of cultural expression for the Dharma, for something that's values-based and is really deeply centered on the idea that you can transform the way you perceive the world and the way you experience the world. And, you know, sobriety is part of that and ethical life is part of that. But in your case, Sangadhar, you've designed this amazing space. So, I mean, maybe just talk the listeners through what we can see in this room and how does this effort that you've made in the space, the beauty of it, the intricate design and different aspects, how does it relate to this idea of you, I suppose, trying to find expression for your deepest values?
If you would have seen my mood board for the interior design, I had three words. They were industrial, Japanese, and animism. So the industrial was very much continuing the heritage of this building. It was an old cotton warehouse, which is part of the history of Manchester. And when you walk into this place, you immediately see your brick walls, you see big black steel tubes from the old plumbing, and you see these big pillars of steel that are holding the building and wooden beams holding the building up. So that's very much wanted to be part of the building. So all our tables are real wood. They're based of black metal, and all our chairs are black metal as well and padded too. And in this room we're in right now, which is the event room, for me, that's kind of what I wanted to create this space for, which on the left side, on one side, we have some floor seating. So a bit like inspired by the Japanese part, I suppose. And also, as I don't know, Buddhist. And I love sitting on the floor, nice as a kid. So I really wanted to have a place to sit on the floor in Manchester.
So meditation was part of it, like you're sitting on the floor meditating. Is that?
Yeah. Kind of... And also wanted to have tea ceremonies, you know, do events around drinks. Because, yeah, drinks are social rituals. No, even by ourselves, we're like a cup of tea or... We like having gone out for coffee while working or reading a book. So drinks are just like a very old ritual that we still practice. And they happen in all sorts of seating, including floor seating. So I really wanted to have some floor seating. And then we have some chairs and some tables. And on that one corner, we have a bit of a stage. Now, we don't have very tall ceilings, so our stage is just it's a couple of inches high.
A dais. A raised dais.
It's like a tiny platform.
It's very lovely, though. It's definitely a distinct maze.
Actually, Saraha built that as well, which is fun because he builds as well. We've got a prayer wheel that he built. So it was great to bring it back. And he's contributed to the making of this space. Anyway, so he made a floor. We've got a piano there and lots of plants. And the idea of the stage is that it's a space where Sangha and non-Sangha people can share the arts. One of our core values is imagination, and that is to be expressed through the arts.
So Sangha's community, that's the kind of Buddhist idea of community, and you're basically cultivating community. And in a way, it doesn't really matter which bit you belong to, whether you're a Buddhist or not a Buddhist. You've made this space, and well, listening to the description, you might think that it's because it's industrial, it's a bit hard. But actually, I mean, it's amazing how soft the space is. You've made it not just comfortable, but genuinely, the light is soft, the decor is soft. There's still quite a lot of space in it. There's room to breathe. It's made for people. It's made for human beings. You can imagine events in this space.
Yeah.
It's really extraordinary.
I remember when Sangadhara first said that he wanted to really highlight the industrial nature of the basement and really play into the fact that we are in a basement. And I was like, what? Are you crazy? Like, you know, light colours, as much light as possible. Let's try and bring it up a bit. And, you know, but I let Sangadhara make the decision. He is the design visionary. And, yeah, I remember when we first started decorating the place, he was so particular, and I'd started rolling my eyes at him, still doing what he said, but, you know, roll my eyes. And then after we'd finished the first half, I was like, okay, Sangadhara, I'm not going to question you anymore, because this space is absolutely gorgeous. And just, I knew he was talented, but getting to see him work on such a large scale has just been incredible. And so many of our customers mention, oh, this space is so beautiful. Yeah, like, really, I want to come down here because of how beautiful it is.
Yeah, it's really welcoming. It's hard to make a basement welcoming, but it really is. And when we say basement, we don't mean, again, that you have to traverse miles underground. There's a lovely neon sign on the outside that says open. You walk down some wrought iron stairwell into this space that just opens out, almost like a fantasy or a dream or something. It's very lovely. I was struck by what you said there about Sangha, Buddhist community, but also that just being porous, just open to anyone. And Stephen, I know you're kind of newer to Buddhism in some ways than Sangadhara. You were telling me earlier today when we were chatting that actually you gave up quite a lot to do this project. And there is this tradition of, in our community certainly, and in Buddhism generally, of what we call right livelihood, basically transforming your work through the ethics inherent in Buddhist practice. In a way, if you're going to be a Buddhist, you're going to live by ethical principles, eventually your work comes up. And loads of people have this dilemma in life, whether they're Buddhist or not, but you've really gone for it. Like, you've given up teaching, you're like here, and you're all in. Well, I mean, what's that like in terms of your practice as a Buddhist and like why that is an expression for you?
So I first came across the Buddhist Center 5 or 6 years ago, and it was probably around 4 years ago that I started getting really, really involved. And it was around that time that I started questioning my work, just finishing up a degree in law. And for the past 4 years, my absolute passion, ambition had been to work within immigration and asylum law. And I kind of just assumed that that would automatically work with Buddhism when I did come across Buddhism. And then I worked for a year for a law firm after finishing my degree. I was on the track to become a solicitor. I was without tooting my own horn. I was very, very good at it. But I was working for a commercial firm and it just didn't sit right. They were doing great work, but it was very much profit driven and it just didn't sit right. So I thought, oh, the way to do this in a more dharmic way or a more Buddhist value driven way is to start my own firm and do it that way and really focus on helping people rather than making money. And again, that didn't quite work, didn't quite sit right. So I started looking for different areas to work in that would sit more with my values. And yeah, I started teaching, which again felt like a natural thing that would, yes, of course this will be Buddhist. And it's still, it wasn't overtly Buddhist. You know, it was kind of hidden in there. I had to translate things. And then Sangadhara came to me with this idea of working for a Buddhist business that was going to be focused on really promoting sobriety, really promoting connection and community and imagination and wisdom. And just everything that it was focused on was just a core value for me. I'd always planned at some point to leave things behind and work for a Buddhist business, work for the movement. And this came up and it was just a no-brainer for me. I realized I had to work in a business that was just completely around Buddhism, and this presented the opportunity to do so. And it's been a challenge, you know.
I was going to say, that's like, you've gone for total immersion as a sort of like path. The challenge side of it. Because obviously, hospitality is hard anyway.
And this is hard in there.
Yeah. Right. And you guys have worked so much. Yeah. So hard, 60-hour weeks. No days off. Yeah. Just week after week after week. I'm imagining it's been challenging just at a basic level of life and living it and trying to have any kind of balance in it. But as a Buddhist and as someone who's been working with sobriety for years, what have the challenges been of doing this particular, this kind of work and being all in?
I suppose I am someone who tends to go all in. I do things full throttle. And I suppose the challenge was just, my work before this was quite relaxed, actually. It was part-time. You know, I used to work crazy hours when I was younger. Am I still going to be able to do this? And it was 60, 78 hours a week. And, well, instantly I saw how important Hinterland was to me, how closely it was connected to my values, because I worked tirelessly and I never questioned it once. You know, I used to, when I was working for the law firm, it used to be if they made me do half an hour over my contracted hours, I'd be like, well, I don't know about this, but I just felt it was so easy and natural to just completely give to Hinterland, like I wanted to. I didn't necessarily even need to be downstairs, and I would come downstairs because I wanted to be here doing as much as possible for Hinterland. And that's when I kind of knew that this was the place for me to be. I suppose another challenge was just imposter syndrome. Neither one of us had much experience in hospitality, even less in hospitality management. And we're all of a sudden going to open up this place together and just figure it out as we go along. And would I be good enough? Would I be able to keep committing to that? And then, of course, we made mistakes. And how hard were we going to take them mistakes? Especially, you know, we're not venture capitalists. We don't have loads of finances behind us. So we had to be really, really careful with the mistakes that we made. You know, lost money was really going to impact us. So we had to be really careful. And because it's so close to our hearts, any mistakes that we did make were going to really hurt. Because, you know, we weren't just hurting some business that we worked for 40 hours a week. We were hurting a business that we started, that we believed in. And not just the business, a project that we've formed, as Sangadhara said, our tagline is Brewing a New Society. That isn't just some kind of cheesy tagline. That is genuinely what we believe we are doing here. It's genuinely what we want to do.
You're not even a normal business, is it? What is it you're called?
Community interest company. So we're not for profit. Any profit that we do make gets invested back into the community. It's the perfect legal structure for us to have because it's announcing to the world we are not in this for profit. We are not in this for money. We are not doing this for normal business reasons. We are doing this because we care. And care not just about Buddhism, but care about our community around us. Like, we're not trying to convert everyone. We're trying to help everyone. So how can we help our community?
And what's the response been? Do people pick that up?
Yeah, no, it's particularly because we run events like Poetry Nights and Dead Cafes and we're going to start also philosophy cafes and all those things. Dead Cafes, we just opened the space to have a very lightly facilitated conversation around death, around dying, around fear of death, about grief. Almost like a check-in around the theme of death. You know, death being such a taboo topic almost, which is insane because it's something that we all experience personally probably multiple times in our lifetime, and we don't really talk about it. So anyway, just creating a space to allow having what should be a very natural and needed conversation to have. So yeah, that, and poetry nights has been one of our most regular things from the beginning, because someone that used to work in the cafe here decades ago, he became a full-time poet, and now he's back facilitating poetry nights. From there, actually, people come to poetry nights, come and want to be volunteering with us behind it.
When they get the values side of it, presumably most people are Buddhists, right? So they're coming in, they pick up from you guys that you work in a sort of community-centered enterprise, and you've got something a bit unusual, which is your Buddhist context. They respond to that and they see that there's something else going on here.
Yeah, and some people just like immediately like pick on the vibes or something. But they say, actually, the times I've heard people just coming in and say like, oh, this place is a vibe. Like,
it's
I
so
love
zen.
So zen as well. Which is not a word it will use. But
that must be pretty gratifying, though.
It is, yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's lovely to hear people's comments. Like they're picking up on something. And also, like as Stephen said, like we're not really pushy about any of this. People can engage, you know, even at the most superficial level. They get in a product that is not supporting an industry of intoxication or cruelty. Even in our most superficial, transactional, commercial capitalist way, we already try to exemplify different values. Mm. It is a genuine alternative commercial offer. A little bit more, you know, we can be a community where people can come and, you know, befriend us or befriend other people on the basis of our values, and if you get even more involved, come and live with us, and you know, just like, and help building and growing there. So it's an open invitation for engagement to whatever depths people are able or willing. You know, one of our members of the staff as well, she turned up as a customer, and now she, you know, she was doing a dedication ceremony with us early this week, which is a little ritual where we say Buddhist stuff and we are kind of declaring almost our aspirations of making this for the benefit of all beings. You know, that's one of the things we say. Basically, yes, people are getting it at different levels.
Yeah, she came in as a customer. We happened to be a bit quiet, so I ended up engaging in a conversation with her. Mentioned that, you know, one of the inspirations for this place was me being in recovery. She ended up saying that she wanted to volunteer with us for a little bit. And then one night after we finished work, we just sat down and had a chat, and she was not necessarily wavering with her sobriety, but just wavering whether she wanted to do it, wavering whether it was a good idea for her or her ability to do it. And we just sat down and we had a really good, really deep, really honest conversation. I shared some experience. She had this view of, I'll definitely drink one day. And I just kind of said, you might, but saying that will make it definite. Not saying it gives you a chance. And we just engaged in a conversation from there. And yeah, it really inspired me about the potential of Hinterland, because she was recently, a couple of months ago, she was 3 months sober. And I just sent her a message to congratulate her. And she said, you and Hinterland are the reason that I'm sober. I corrected her and said that she was the reason that she was sober. But it's amazing that we already in our first 6 months, we are helping one person be sober and one person engage more with the centre. And yeah, also just I can see her becoming friends with all the other people on the team, and really deep friendships. And she's had real problems with other friendships not being so great. So she's getting to experience like true friendship where you genuinely look out for each other. And it's beautiful to see her engaging with that and to see Hinterland making that difference straight away. It's almost the epitome of what I want Hinterland to do, is to encourage engagement with deeper values and to help question our alcohol intake.
Yeah. You guys are exemplifying all over the place. So there's that very moving story of like just touching somebody's life or just creating a space where they can come in and find themselves in a new way and find a path forward. I got to sample your food earlier, as I was saying, and that's another example, isn't it, of you guys start this great business. You can't really do food yourself. You come across another amazing business run by young people in a similar way, not Buddhists, extraordinary vegan, not exactly fast food, as I would describe it.
I think their name is perfect. They are wholesome junkies. So it's like wholesome junk food.
Wholesome junk food, yeah. Yeah, tell us the story about that, Sankara. How did that come about, that partnership come about, and what does it bring?
Well, those guys have been trading here in Manchester for 7 years. They've been an internationally known because they won a few awards, and actually some American press picked some of their stories as well. So we get quite a lot of people from America that know mm-hmm. Wholesome Junkies, and they come just looking for them. And they had to leave their premise and their own restaurant just at the edges of the city centre. And a few people said, hey, you guys, you should contact them. And actually, from the beginning, I knew that we wouldn't do food. And I thought that I would be looking for people to come and do pop-ups in the kitchen, because we have a big kitchen. And we thought, anyway, drinks at events is enough for us to chew. I contacted them quite a few times, and the owner of Wholesome Junkies, I don't think she had visited us because we've only had open for like a month. But it was just like by chatting and just me sending her pictures and telling her about us. And pretty much she agreed, like, okay, yeah, I'm moving in, before she actually visited our space. And yeah, and it's just been a great match. I've been quite moved in a way working with her, because she's been like a one-woman show, single boss kind of thing. Really being very protective of customers, but also of her staff. And just, I really wanted to give them hours, and just almost doing it by herself. And now by moving in with us, just feel like something that we share, basically, that responsibility, that love and passion for our project and trying to care for people. I shall feel very fortunate that I've had Stephen, because yeah, I couldn't have done this by myself. So then actually seeing other people like Chelsea, and I think of a friend, Amala City, doing one in Sheffield, doing it by himself. So it's been great. And I think something else, actually, just having friends to do things with. So, you know, there's also kind of a friendship forming there of mutual support. What we're trying to do, vegan foods and alcohol-free drinks are commercially contra-culture. Yes, it's growing. Yes, there's a lot of offer. Yes, there's more demand. People are moving more towards values, and this alcohol-free stuff because of mental health, vegan stuff for the environment or for animal rights, for whatever it is. There's promising and optimistic perspective. More people are moving towards that. But still, it's up a struggle, you know. Profit margin is smaller because costs are higher and expectations are also kind of high. So it is, as you said, like running hospitalities. Even for people doing meat and alcohol, it's a hard gig. So they are trying to do vegan and dry, you know, it is harder, but at least if you do it with people.
Well, so that was one of the questions I had, was about it, to bring it back to Buddhist practice. There's a big deal in our community, the idea of friendship as a practice, rather than something that just kind of comes along as an incidental with your Buddhism. How has it been for your friendship and your sense of your own personal practice? It sounds like it's been in some ways good for your friendship, but I'd imagine also it's quite a crucible in which to form a much closer friendship. And there's a lot of trust that's going to have to happen. And presumably sometimes you don't both live up to that in some sort of way.
So far, so good.
Yeah, we haven't had any major arguments or anything like that. And, you know, communication has been so important. There's been a few times where we've met and said, especially at the start when it was just me and Sangadara, communication was so difficult because we were just tired and so busy and we had so much to do. There were so many immediate things that have to happen very quickly that finding time to sit just me and Sangadara and communicate deeply was just, you know, it was important, but it wasn't something that needed to be done. So that, I think, we've definitely learned the importance of that. So we try every week to go for brunch on our day off, and we just talk about Hinterland and our practice and ourselves and just, try to connect on that level. But I think it's been quite interesting because we've definitely wanted to do things differently at times, haven't we, and had different focuses. And again, we are working on a passion project together, so it's not like we're talking about some distant thing that's not really central to us. We're talking about the future of our project together, and we might see it going slightly different ways. And it's just the fact that we've managed to communicate about that and it not turn into an argument is, well, a testament to both of our practice. And we have been good friends for quite a while. Sangadara is my prospective KM, which is spiritual friend as part of the ordination process in Taratna. So again, a very intimate friendship already. We also live together in a Buddhist community. So it's just every area of our lives are intertwined. So thankfully it's worked out, otherwise it'd be a bit of a problem if it didn't. I mean, so far, so good. Yeah. I mean, there will be, I'm sure, some point in the future, we will have a big argument. And I suppose I just have faith in both of us that that will be fine and will enrich the friendship, probably.
Yeah. And, you know, it feels like we're still the beginning. I mean, you know, we've only been open for 6 months. As Steven said, like, communication at times is quite short. And it still is, because we're still working quite a lot. You know, sometimes the better communication is when the time is right, when you're rested, when you're in right mental states and you have the space to digest it and then get on with whatever we're talking about. And in here, sometimes it's not like that, you know. Yeah. Sometimes we cannot afford wait until we have the perfect mental state to caveat a bit of feedback where, you know, like, it needs to happen kind of now. So yeah, within that, there's been quite a lot of friction. But yeah, I guess, like, yeah, so far so good, because we try to communicate from the value that we're trying to bring about and exemplify it. And we have our ideals of not just our friendship, but also what we're trying to bring about that's also beyond ourselves. So far, I think that's kind of making us tick. I like to think that the most tested things are behind us. I'm not fully sure that's because...
Like, let's not broadcast that. Let's not. <you know. laughs> Let me say it. This is a Buddhist podcast as well, and we're extolling the value of just normalizing Buddhist values and Buddhist practice in life. You know, forget about being Buddhist in a way. Like, has it given you more confidence being a human being and following your sense of the way you want to live?
Something for me is, well, it brought me into very close contact with my mental state, because just working that much meant that if I let myself go down a rabbit hole of being irritable or moody or sad or something like that, and just kind of feeding that, that would impact not only me, but Sanghadara, the people around me. And it would just be really, really negative. So I couldn't do that anymore. I had to stay engaged and stay not in control of my mental state, but aware of them. And one thing that really helped with that is just engaging with customers. When you're working so much and you're quite irritable, it's so easy to pick a flaw in someone and just judge them before you've even started talking to them, or come up with some sort of dislike for someone that you don't even know. And I decided that I really didn't want to do that anymore. So if I had this sort of instant aversion to someone, I would make sure that I would engage with them more than I normally would. And 9 times out of 10, maybe even 9.5 times out of 10, I would come into very close contact with this person and they would be incredible. You know, they would be a human being. Normally it was old, middle-aged men, maybe because of my circumstances growing up. You know, I found that difficult, and I would portray them as this unemotional, quite hard person that was quite different to me. And then I'd start talking to them and engage with them and find them to be absolutely wonderful and delightful. And that just gives you so much faith in people, of just like, oh, it's so easy to just judge someone that you see and not go any further. But I realized the harm that was causing just myself, really, and I wasn't willing to accept that anymore. So just engaging with people, you find out that they're kind of great. You know, especially, we're a vegan, alcohol-free space. We're going to get mostly nice people down here, and quite quirky people as well. So just engaging with customers, well, realizing that's a vision, almost, like, that's why I'm here. You know, sweeping the floor and serving tables maybe isn't the most fun thing to do. But if you connect that to the visions that we're trying to embody down here, and remember that you're sweeping the floor so someone can come down and enjoy a really good meal and drink with their friend, and that could be really forming for them. It's so much easier when you do that. And then when you're engaging with people on that basis, even though you're not verbalizing that, people can sense it, people can pick up on it, and they just open up to you. The amount of people I've spoken to about sobriety, it's fantastic and really enjoyable, completely different to what I've experienced in other jobs. So
it's very moving to hear about. It's apparent just listening to both of you, actually. A couple of things strike me. One is just how much you care about each other. It's lovely to hear the story. I'm sure people listening to this will love this story of how this has come about. And in a way, these things happen, don't they, in a particular way. It's not super planned out. There's something very organic about it. But you two obviously care a great deal about each other. I'm just watching you almost holding hands at times when you're chocolate. Yeah, putting a hand on somebody and when you're saying something. And the story and the care are what seem to matter in this. I think that's what people respond to. It's extraordinary to see this kind of thing happening in real time is often the sort of thing we talk about retrospectively. It's not often we get this chance to come in right at the beginning and witness something.
Yeah, and as a context for practice, maybe one day I'll actually give a talk or write a little something about hospitality being a tantric guru. Because like Steve and Gisella, like one thing is actually facing customers, you know, in an industry like, you know, the customer is right. And usually hospitality, you can have like this secret battle with either the kitchen or customers, or just like actually being here for service. Even from like the Bodhicharya avatar and his Buddhist verses, when they said something like, may I be the servant for those who need a servant, may I be food, may I be just like the elements make themselves useful to all living beings for nourishment, for growth. We recite, reflect in that way, actually, may I be used to bring about happiness, to actually having dozens and dozens, if not sometimes hundreds of opportunities within a single day of actually making someone happier, giving them what they want, giving them actually food, giving them actually drinks. And we talk about like make the world a better place, you know, start a table at a time. Just like wiping a table. While also, you know, being at times difficult, you know, sometimes customers are just at face value, you know, quite difficult. There's even just your example just now, like I had one this afternoon. He was just immediately quite pricky. And actually, I remember I said to Sky, one of our team, as I we need to be super careful with this. So I started to be extra caring for him. And then at the end, he was just like, it's fantastic, it was lovely. And he completely flipped to my own surprise. And also, yeah, and at times very testing. You know, he went off on retreat. So trying to support him to go off on retreat. But then it was just like working with fever on our busiest ever Saturday, kind of thing. It was like constantly packed. We broke records and I was feverish. And I only sat for 10 minutes to place an order or something, but we were running out. Worked for 14 hours. And, you know, so sometimes you're not very resourced, basically, and still just be there for service.
So I was just remembering that a year ago, we were in Mexico together and I attended a particular event there and I ended up doing an episode of the podcast called The Tale of Tipu's Tiger about a sort of similar passion project about 30 years ago in Missoula, Montana, where a couple of board members and a group of relatively young people came together and did an extraordinary Indian restaurant project in an area where there just was nothing like that at all. And it was super hard and super challenging. It was very moving hearing their tales of it, but I was really struck that they were all saying people still come up to them 30 years later and say, oh, I remember you. I remember that thing you did in town and I really wish you still did it. And there was this kind of sense of they'd done it for their own reasons and it was part of their practice and they kind of dropped a stone in the water and the ripples were still running all these years later. And it was quite healing in a way to sit in the room with them. They hadn't all been in the same room for a long time since the project ended. I guess we've all learned from some of the experiences of the history of work as a practice in our particular community. And who knows where this one's going to go, but just now it seems to be just off to an extraordinary start. And, you know, sitting today sipping that cocktail, Santa Sleigh. Well, it was a complex drink, and this sounds like it's been a complex experience so far. Yeah. And the complex reasons for doing it, you know, we could talk for hours about this, but...
I do.
You do, that's right. But I suppose the main thing is, and hopefully this comes across in the podcast, is working. You're doing something right.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds very simple and basic, but actually that's really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, doing something right.
I was actually stood just at the front of our bar today, looking over the space and just trying to connect to the fact that we did this. In some ways, it still doesn't compute. I can kind of just like, especially with Sangadara being the design visionary, I can kind of just look over the space and be like, we did this. Now, Sangadara did this and I was kind of there. And it's like, no, like you were there, you know, you did this and just... It still feels weird that people pay for something that we're doing. That concept of, no, we are running a Buddhist business, a community interest company. People come, have heard about us, you know, they know about us, we are working. And it still baffles my mind that a year ago, me and Sangadara were sat in his room typing up a business plan about this place. And now it's...
Isn't that the way with probably all great things in life, but certainly all great things in Buddhist practice, is that at once it's intensely personal and intimate, and it's also not about you.
Yeah,
it's something, it's something much bigger going on.
Yeah,
you're taking part in something.
Yeah.
when the customers make it, the world makes it, like the context around you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's something we've been really big on, is this is a team business. We are not Hinterland. We're part of Hinterland, but Hinterland is much bigger than what we are, and it's bigger than, you know, what we're doing right now is a alcohol-free bar, vegan restaurant and event space. But even that is just a medium that we are communicating what Hinterland is through. Hinterland is, well, it's our three values, isn't it? It's community, it's imagination, it's wisdom. And that will take many forms throughout its different stages. And yeah, this is a form that it's in at the moment, and it's an amazing form, and it will keep developing, and it will develop past our limitations. You know, it'll be bigger and better and more complicated than we are.
Yeah. I mean, I often tell people like, oh yeah, we're a community interest company currently in the shape of a sober bar and a vegan cafe. But it does feel like could morph into a theater, or it could morph into something else. I just remember thinking that maybe last time I was in one of these podcasts, I was talking with a friend about our childhood. One of the things that drew me into Buddhism was actually I felt like, oh, I might see the end of the world and I don't know what I'm going to do. And that threw me into philosophy and spirituality. And in terms of my connection with that and Hinterland is that there is this manifesto, Black Mountain, I think it's called Manifesto. I don't know if you're familiar with it. At the end of it, it says, the end of the world as we know it is not the end of the world, full stop. The end of the world as we know it is not the end of the world, full stop. That's a hinterland for us as well. Mm. We are trying to bring something new about that's in contrast with the old world and on old world making business or what we trade or our products and the way that we interact with customers, with each other. There is a creative tension and there's quite a lot of potential. And how does Buddhist practice and Buddhist wisdom and Buddhist practitioners help bringing that about? That is an open exploration. We are just an expression of that conversation.
You're just starting out, guys. Be excited to see where this goes, whether you turn into theater or a boutique hotel or whatever it is, fine dining, who knows? The sky's the limit. Since this is a holiday edition of the podcast, well, first of all, let's wish everybody very happy holidays, whatever you celebrate. If you don't celebrate at all, happy normal week. And happy new year. This will probably be the first episode of 2025, which sounds like the future. So from here in December 2024, happy new year to everybody. Maybe we should finish with just a description of one of your very fine, complex, alcohol-free, beautifully made mindful drinks, Santa Sleigh.
Yeah, this one, the base of this is actually in the US and the UK, so hopefully lots of listeners will be able to make it. So it starts with 50 ml of Pathfinder, which is a really interesting hemp and root spirit. So this is one of the spirits that isn't trying to be an imitation of an alcohol. It's its own thing. It's very bitter, but with a little bit of sweetness. It's really delicious. 50 ml of that. Then 20 mils of Santa syrup, which is an apple and cinnamon syrup. So if you don't get that where you are, just a sweet kind of cinnamony syrup. 10 mils of lemon juice, and then top it off with ginger ale or beer and a little bit of soda water. Mix it all together. And then if you're feeling particularly Christmassy, garnish it with a mini candy cane. And there you go, that's a drink.
No, oh, it was fantastic. It was so subtle and slightly spicy. And
yeah.
I have to say, the candy cane was perfection. When I finally chomped on it at the end after the drink, it was like absolutely brilliant. So yeah, make yourself a Santa sleigh. Pour one out for a friend. Maybe toast your lives together.
Yeah.
And the work you might do, the work you have done. And thanks to you two for just sharing your vision, your story, your passion. And actually, particularly just sitting with you, your friendship is really lovely to see. It feels like a great Christmas present to me to just drop in on this when you're busy and it's, you know, the last Friday before Christmas. My goodness.
Mad Friday.
So thanks for sharing it with us. I really hope Hinterland goes from strength to strength. I kind of feel sure it will in some way.
Depend on it beings.
So thanks to you, Sangadar. Thanks to you, Stephen,
for having us.
Chandradesa, thank you all for listening.
Yeah, thanks to everybody for listening. Have a very peaceful new year, and we'll see you in 2025 for more episodes of the Buddhist Center podcast. You can find the whole archive. You can listen to The Tale of Tipu's Tiger and other episodes. If you like it, if you like the stories you hear, please tell a friend. There's just so many podcasts. It's a boom industry again. Very few podcasts make any money or even can build an audience. But the ones that can, it's through people telling people they like, people they love about them. So yeah, if you like these stories, tell a friend, get them to listen. Give them the gift of the Dharma in the form of stories. And we'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.